she was a really useful asset to him as well, like in terms of global relations and just the way she appeared to the public as this fashion icon and someone that young girls and women could look up to. And she really understood the power of the position, I think, which definitely created a precedent for future first ladies.
Hello and welcome to America, a history podcast. I'm your host, Liam Heffernan, and every week we answer a different question to understand the people, the places, and the events that shaped the USA into the country it is today. This week, I find out more about how one of America's most popular first ladies turned her office and indeed her residence for 3 years into a living museum of US political history, as we ask, how did Jackie Kennedy transform the White House? And to discuss this, I'm joined by Jess Aldred, a final year American history undergraduate from the University of East Anglia. Welcome, Jess.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's really good to have you on the show today. And as I've been saying before, incoherently to you, I'm really excited about this topic. And hopefully it sheds some light onto everyone listening about just how influential, I guess, not just Jackie Kennedy, but first ladies, how influential they can be to the president, to the country, and particularly, as we're going to learn, to the White House itself.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess let's kind of take a step back before we jump into the specific topic and learn a little bit more about who Jackie Kennedy was and kind of where that inspiration for this project that we're going to talk about came from, if you could enlighten us.
Yeah, so Jackie Kennedy, I think most people will know the name. She was the 35th First Lady of the United States, and became so when her husband, JFK, was elected to the presidency in 1960. She's a really interesting historical figure, and is probably one of the most well-known and most popular First Ladies in American history. You see the images of her in a pink pillbox suit in Dallas, or of her in a black dress and veil walking behind her husband's coffin. And they continue to come to people's minds when they think of Jackie Kennedy. She's considered to be both a cultural and a fashion icon, and her legacy is usually associated with glamour, style, and resilience in the face of tragedy. But there was so much more than a fashion icon or JFK's wife. She was highly intelligent, an important asset to her husband's campaign and presidency, a supporter of many humanitarian causes, and had a really strong passion for the arts and heritage. I previously learned about her work to preserve Grand Central Station in New York City in 1975, but I feel like this side of her had always been overshadowed by her public image and her husband's assassination. It's one thing I really didn't know much about until I spent some time in Washington, D.C. during my year abroad was the work that she did to preserve the heritage of the White House. After entering the White House in 1961, she set out to restore the interior of the building and make it accessible to the public, helping it live up to its nickname of the People's House, which was first used in the 1800s. It was the biggest project during her husband's 1,000 days in office, and its legacy is felt today. And then you asked about the inspirations as well. And I think one of the biggest inspirations came 2 decades earlier in 1941, when she visited the White House herself as a young girl. She later recalled in an interview with Hugh Sidney for Life magazine that the house really didn't leave a significant impression on her when she was younger, and she was disappointed not to receive any kind of informational guide or feel any of the history of the building. Once she became First Lady, she was also disappointed to find that the previous administrations had not upheld the historical significance of the building, instead decorating as they please, like disposing of historical antiques and furnishing the rooms with department store pieces. She pointed out there was hardly anything from before 1902 in the house, and was keen to remove the traces of Mamie Eisenhower's fondness for the colour pink, which was quite famous at the time. In Jackie's eyes, the White House should have been a symbol of America. It should have been well maintained and reflect the history of the nation while being accessible to the public. But she didn't find it to be like that when she entered the White House in 1961.
I'm really interested about this kind of separation of the White House from, you know, because part of it is office workspace. Part of it is very much living quarters, because the president and his family have to actually kind of make a home and a life there, and to some degree. But it feels like Jackie Kennedy kind of realized that there was also this part of the White House which sort of stood as a kind of living history of what America is and was, in a way that previous presidents didn't really seem to get.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, John Adams was the first president to move into the White House, and there were times throughout history where it was destroyed by a fire in 1814. But like you said, because it is a home, I feel like a lot of presidents wanted to make it a home and make it personal and add their own touches. But they really didn't know the value of preserving the historical side as well, which obviously with it being destroyed in certain times and being renovated, you kind of lose a lot of that. And Jackie, with her fondness for the arts, really wanted to bring that back, especially for the public to see.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that it took so long for someone to kind of realize that, I guess, and to think that actually there's something more to it than just redecorating. Because I guess that there's a bit of a power trip, isn't there? You're the president, you're the first lady, you move in, you just want to like put your own stamp on it, get your own pictures, get your own flowers, your own carpet and whatever, and kind of make it yours. But it's more than that, isn't it? It's not just a redecoration. So what exactly did Jackie Kennedy do?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, the redecoration, that was one thing she talked about in the interview I mentioned for Life magazine, that she really wanted to focus on restoration as opposed to decoration, because she wanted everything in the house to have a reason for being there. She didn't really like the word redecorated. She described it as an act of sacrilege for a house that was so significant. She really understood the value and the history of the White House. And she started on the project almost immediately after she moved in, on the 23rd of January 1961, which was her first official day of work as the new First Lady. She arranged for a meeting with the chairman of Washington, D.C.'s Fine Arts Commission and for advice on forming her own committee. So she was really interested in the project from the start, and it officially began in April 1961 when she issued a memorandum describing the White House as many things in one: a home, headquarters of the president, and a symbol of national power and purpose, as well as a cultural monument. And she really wanted her work to reflect this. The exterior of the building had maintained its dignity and simplicity, whereas the interior had undergone so many changes, as I mentioned, reflecting the tastes of the changing occupants, which contributed to loss of much of its historical value. And she really sought to restore the White House to reflect the styles of past presidents from its 160-year history. So she worked alongside Senator Clinton P. Anderson to develop legislation which designated the house as a museum under the direct administration of the National Park Service, which was one of the biggest first steps of the project, allowing it to receive donations directly. She also created the Fine Arts Committee to help her search for and acquire antiques from different presidencies. She sought help from three key figures, Dorothy May Parrish, an interior designer, Henry Francis DuPont, an American collector and antique expert, and Stéphane Boudin, a renowned French designer. She also created the Office of the Curator, appointing Lorraine Waxman Pierce to the position. And with her assistance, she began to plan the designs for each room.
And, you know, you mentioned about how, you know, the senator and others kind of bought into this project. And I guess like anything that has any sort of political element to it, there needs to be a lot of buy-in. But the first thing that I thought of was, when you were talking about this, was the Christmas when the Trumps were in the White House and Ivana sort of lined the corridor with the Christmas trees, and, you know, the pictures went viral and the reaction to it was just like crazy when it was just a few Christmas trees. But people were like, what's she doing? I know we didn't have social media back in the 60s, but did Jackie Kennedy kind of face any sort of backlash from politicians or from the public?
Yeah, I think there was definitely some public criticism of using such a large amount of money, especially to fund such a project when people believed it could have been used better elsewhere. One critical letter actually described the project as her whimsy to satisfy her urge for interior decorating, which I guess was kind of contradicted her idea that she wanted to restore rather than redecorate. I think she was trying to get that message across. But with money as well, she ran into difficulty like actually financing the project, even though she had connections with Congress. She understood that it would have been unpopular to ask them for such a large amount of funding to just acquire antiques and furniture. The $50,000 that initially had been designated to the project was spent almost immediately, which prompted her to have to look for other sources of funding. She turned to contacting donors themselves to persuade them to donate their historically significant pieces, and also set out to create a guidebook, the first of which was published in 1962, and the funds from the sale of the book were used to continue the project. So even despite some of the setbacks, she managed to find a way to work through them.
Yeah, and when we talk about, you know, getting sort of museum status for the White House, what does that actually mean in terms of, you know, what did she do physically within the White House? How did she transform certain rooms, for instance, to kind of justify that?
Well, she was really keen on conducting historical research herself to determine past like styles of rooms and placements of furniture. She used magazine articles and books and any evidence she could find to find out how previous presidents had like historically decorated the rooms. So one example, she found a magazine article from 1946, which mentioned that the Blue Room in the East Wing was once furnished with a French Empire style gilt wooden furniture designed by Pierre-Antoine Bellanger. And these furnishings had been ordered in 1818 by President James Monroe, who'd renovated the White House himself after the house was destroyed in 1814 by a fire started by the British during the War of 1812. Using this information, she decided to renovate the Blue Room in this same style. She tasked her staff with finding examples of this kind of furniture, discovered a bust of George Washington, which was similar to the one that President Monroe had kept himself in the Blue Room. And she also made the decision to change the colour of the walls to cream, which was different to the way it had been before with the blue wallpaper, but she kept the blue accents. So she also completely designed the Red Room once again in a French style, using sofas that belonged to First Lady Dolly Madison and a French chandelier from 1820. And while she did add some personal touches, like changing the wallpaper, she stated in a memorandum to Pierre Salinger that the aim of her committee was to restore and not change the White House. And before and after pictures of the rooms, especially the Red Rooms and the Blue Room, highlighted the amount of work that she put into transforming each room. The restoration effort actually led to the acquisition of over 500 items of historical significance. As a result of the legislation that designated the public rooms of the White House to be a museum, any furniture deemed historically significant was unable to be sold or claimed by any future First Families. And any items that future residents did not want on display were to be held by the Smithsonian Institution to be preserved, exhibited and stored.
That's really interesting. And I guess as important as that work was, and as probably onerous as it was at that time to kind of do that research and kind of figure out where those artifacts were and what they even were in the first place, and then to bring them into the White House, I guess the overarching question in my mind is, like, why? What's the point? Because like what's the actual like value in doing all of this? Like, what's the end result? And you mentioned before there was like a guidebook, and I just wondered in terms of, you know, how all of this work ends up being communicated and filtered down to some sort of public benefit. Is the guidebook kind of part of that effort?
Yeah, she was, as I mentioned, that when she visited the White House as a young girl, she was really disappointed to not receive anything of this kind of like a guidebook, any kind of informational guide. So she really wanted to make this in order for visitors to have an understanding of the work that she'd done and the way that rooms had changed throughout history. So she created this in the early days of the project, partially to receive the funding, but also to provide this information. And alongside this as well, she also filmed a television special of the newly renovated White House, which was broadcast on Valentine's Day in 1862. Which was the first televised tour of the White House and is also considered to be the first primetime documentary designed to appeal specifically to a female audience, which featured Jackie and was viewed by more than 80 million people. So as well as the guidebook, she also created this, which connected the public to like actually viewing the work that she'd done.
And do you know what? I think just as a bit of a tangent to specifically talking about this project, I think it's really interesting that one of the things, as you just mentioned, that Jackie did was a project that was really quite focused towards women in terms of how it was communicated and promoted, you know, that television special being a prime example. Do you think that it kind of shows just what a unique position the First Lady has, because they really get to push through an agenda that really no other politician could even do? You know, if someone came to the government and said, I need all this money to, you know, do what Jackie did to the White House, they'd probably get laughed at, wouldn't they?
Yeah, she definitely really understood that she had a significant role to play that wasn't just the wife of the president. she was a really useful asset to him as well, like in terms of global relations and just the way she appeared to the public as this fashion icon and someone that young girls and women could look up to. And she really understood the power of the position, I think, which definitely created a precedent for future first ladies.
Do you think that, like Jackie Kennedy, more than other first ladies, probably because of her and JFK's age at the time, do you think that there was something quite aspirational about her that, maybe there wasn't about previous first ladies?
Yeah, definitely. Like you mentioned, the age, a lot of the first ladies before her had been quite a bit older. So seeing such a young couple was quite revolutionary at that time. They definitely brought a new feeling to the White House of youth, and then the 60s as well, the kind of culture that created, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess my thought process here is that if all of that kind of ties in, and actually, you know, Jackie was quite uniquely positioned to actually get this project done, even compared to other first ladies, because of the reputation she had and because of the image that she and John F. Kennedy had. It feels like if you'd have asked me to guess which first lady had done this project, I probably would have guessed Jackie Kennedy. It just feels like a very Kennedy sort of thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she was well known for being really interested in the arts and history and heritage. So yeah, it definitely feels like fitting with something you would expect her to do.
Yeah, and sort of thinking about the sort of the legacy and the particularly the sort of the enduring legacy that the Kennedys have. As you pointed out, you know, everyone kind of talks about JFK and the assassination of JFK. That tends to overshadow even his presidency, let alone Jackie Kennedy. So what sort of kind of mark on the White House, on America, on US history as a whole, do you think that Jackie Kennedy left from this project?
Yeah, I think the legacy is definitely really important. You can definitely see the immediate legacy of a project in the increased public fascination with the White House. Public tours of the White House have been available for many years. Following Truman's exterior restoration project, the number of yearly visitors peaked with over 960,000 people in 1957. But then following Jackie's project in 1962, the number of viewers reached 1.5 million. So you can really see just the video special, the guidebook, just seeing the project she'd done had really increased public fascination. You can also see it in the legacy of the work of her successor, First Lady Lady Bird Johnson. Jackie left a letter for Lady Bird following her leaving the White House, which outlined her vision for the continued preservation of the White House. And to continue Jackie's project, President Johnson created the Committee for the Preservation of the White House by executive order in 1964. And the committee was made up of citizens with experience in historic preservation, as well as the White House curator, the Secretary of the Smithsonian, and the First Lady as honorary chair. It was tasked with creating policies that relate to the building's museum status and to work with each new first family to maintain the historical integrity of the building. And as well as this, as well as turning the White House into a living museum, she played a key role in establishing the White House Historical Association, which still exists today. It was created in 1961 and now continues its work to protect, preserve, and provide public access to the rich history of America's executive mansion, which is its statement on its website. She insisted that the association be nonpartisan and privately run, which means it's not caught up in partisan budget debates and still functions really successfully today. And while I was in DC, I actually networked with two historians who work for the association and heard a lot more about what the association does and how its legacy is still present in the work today, 60 years after it was established. I also went on tours of both the East and West Wing of the White House, and you can really see the work that went into showcasing the rich heritage of the United States through this building.
I'm actually very jealous. I've been to Washington DC, but I've seen it from afar. I don't think it was open for tours when I went, but like I don't know if you can recall, there's that road that goes between sort of the Washington Monument and the White House, and you can kind of get that good front view onto the White House. That's as close as I got to it. But it's a very grand looking building. But I wonder if the White House went through this period, thanks as well to this sort of, you know, the work done by Jackie Kennedy, of kind of moving from just being a government building and a house, a residence, to being a sort of fully fledged kind of historical monument because purely because of its age. Because, I mean, now it's over 200 years old. And when Jackie Kennedy did what she did, it was over 150 years old. Before then, I guess you were still in this territory of it being a relatively new building.
Yeah, in terms of when she followed examples of like Europe's historic buildings, the White House is relatively young in that sense. But she didn't, she wanted to follow that example just to keep this image of the American strength and pride in the house. She wanted that the country to really see that its history was present in that building. And really, I think the work that she's done has kept that up to date. As you can see, First Ladies all work alongside the association to maintain the history, especially in the East Wing, is kept like this living museum, whereas the West Wing is more functional offices in terms of where the president works.
When you were touring the White House, what sort of, I was going to say like, what's your favourite room, which is probably the most boring question I've ever asked on this podcast. But like, kind of, what kind of vibe were you getting as you were walking around it?
You can definitely see the historical element in terms of the portrait. There's at least one portrait of every president present within the White House. I got to see the Obama's portraits, which was really interesting, the most recent ones up in the White House. And then there's the famous Gilbert Stuart portrait of George Washington, which was really amazing to see. So yeah, it's mostly, you could see the coloured room, the red room, the blue room. It's all present in the decor, you can tell how much work went into keeping it.
Sorry, I completely cut you off there. I really wanted to ask if you got to see the Oval Office or if that is like strictly out of bounds.
No, yeah, I did get to see. You're not allowed inside. It's kind of roped off, but you are allowed to like kind of lean in and have a look around. No pictures allowed, unfortunately, but
yeah,
I got to
of course.
See it, yeah.
No, I bet that was amazing to see though. Did you notice any sort of crevices in like the bookshelves or cases that could have been like little secret passageway?
No, unfortunately not, but I'm sure, you know, there might be something hidden in there.
There's gotta be. I do just, I guess, want to touch lastly on, you know, the White House as a whole. Yeah, it's given me these kind of Buckingham Palace vibes, you know, talking to about the sort of the restoration of it and you know, bringing these artifacts in and turning it into a public attraction. For a country that really wants to distance itself from the monarchy, and very much that's how it was born, there's real similarities there between the White House and Buckingham Palace, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think you can say, I've had a tour of certain areas in Buckingham Palace, and you can see the similarity, I think, with the style of the artwork in there. It's very like rooted in the past, which I guess was Jackie's idea, but yeah, you can definitely see a lot of regal touches, especially in the European style decor, like the French furniture and everything like that. You can definitely see the similarities.
Yeah, I think there's this like growing sort of overlap in how the president and the royal family sort of operate, because as the presidency itself becomes older and steeped in more traditions, you know, every president seems to leave another tradition behind and that then has to be followed. It's, you're kind of seeing the same thing play out. It's just a few hundred years younger. There is something quite regal now about the president and the White House and all of the kind of, I won't go as far as to say there's like pomp and pageantry, but there is like, there's something, isn't there?
Yeah, you can definitely tell, especially with like the inaugural ball and the whole tradition with that, definitely feels very regal, and the position of power, obviously, of the president, especially.
Yeah, although probably if I ever did work in the White House, I'd be very glad that I didn't have to take part in some of the traditions. Don't you have to? There's some weird royal traditions, isn't there? Like you have to obviously do the curtsy, but. I don't know. I'm going to ask you this as if you know anything about it. But, you know, if you sit down for like a banquet at the White House, I wonder if you still have to apply the same etiquette of like using certain hands for certain pieces of cutlery and like addressing someone to your right before your left. I don't know what the rules are, but there's certain like social rules when you're having dinner with like the royal family. I wonder if the same applies to the president.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some kind of, you know, you have to sit on a particular side or the president has a particular chair. I know they follow a different style of like table etiquette because I had to learn a bit of that while I was in DC. There's a European style and an American style, which I'm sure for banquets they'll probably follow.
Well, there you go. There's the sequel episode, different banqueting styles between the UK and the US. But we could talk about the White House forever, I'm sure. But it's been genuinely really fascinating to hear about the work that Jackie Kennedy has done. And we're going to have to wrap up the episode here. So thank you so much for joining me for this. I've left some useful links in the show notes. So if you really did find this episode interesting and you want to find out more, do check out those. But Jess, if anyone wants to connect with you, where can they do that?
Yeah, I think the best place is probably LinkedIn. It's just Jess Aldred on LinkedIn. Yeah, Aldred.
Wonderful. And you can find me on X via This Is The Hef and on LinkedIn. Just search for Liam Heffernan. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a rating and review wherever you're listening. And give us a follow as well so all future episodes appear in your feed. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.